Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal: enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward. Together, that's exactly where we're going to go.
I'm Steve Walder.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsinized look at this week in the Capitol. J.R., Wispolitics is all over something that just happened. It's a big, big deal. So can you summarize it?
Essentially, states a three-judge federal panel is ordering lawmakers to redraw the assembly districts, district lines by November 1st of this year. So remember, we've talked about this before.
Yeah.
Democrats sued, essentially alleging that Republicans had packed them into certain assembly districts or cracked them.
Yep, pack
so
and crack.
They diluted the influence of their voters in determining who could, you know, how many seats each party held in the assembly.
Yes, it was a new argument, and this was a presidential this ruling set a precedent,
yes,
is what I'm trying to say.
So the three-judge panel had taken arguments from both sides about, well, what do we do now? Because we said the maps are unconstitutional.
Yep.
What do we do?
What type of relief?
The state wanted to hold everything and have the U.S. Supreme Court weigh in first. The Democrats said, no, we should draw maps now, and actually we'd like you guys, the courts, to do it. The court said today, essentially, was we're going to have lawmakers and the governor take first crack at this. They have until November 1st this year to have maps drawn, signed into law, and in place. That'll give enough time for candidates running in 2018 to get their stuff together, circulate signatures, get organized, all that kind of good stuff. Now, the caveat, of course, is that there's still an appeal option for the state. Brad Schimel, the Attorney General, has indicated he will appeal the original ruling, saying these maps are unconstitutional, to the U.S. Supreme Court. Will the court take it? When will it rule? All these things are up in the air. But for right now, we're moving forward with the idea of, okay, it's time to draw a new map.
But it's a major development because Court of Appeals judges have now said, we're not going to wait for Mr. Schimel to appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. We're going to order by November 1 new maps drawn by the current ledge.
Yes.
Okay.
And one thing the court said in the ruling that I read real quickly was that, look, you guys did a lot of work before in drawing these maps 2011. You have other versions out there. And there may be one out there that meets the standard. We can just go grab that one. So you can go look at your past work. It should speed up the process. And November 1st is the deadline to have these things in place.
Does this put the ball then in Attorney General Schimel's court to expedite his appeal to the U.S. Supremes?
Mm-hmm. So that's up to him. Now he's going to appeal this. He's obviously going to seek a stay if he is going to appeal so they don't have to work on these things. The window becomes, all right, when will the U.S. Supreme Court rule? Because now you got to think, will the court take it? How long is that going to take?
And President Trump is scheduled to announce his
nominee next week. When would the court take it? If it does, when would it rule? You're talking, it could compact the window in 18 quite a bit to get new maps in place, if that is going to happen, in time for these guys to circulate nomination papers and be on the ballot in the August of 2018.
Okay, and this just happened, so we don't have reaction from the Attorney General, Senate Majority Leader Fitzgerald, or Speaker Voss yet.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. All right. Up until this morning, the biggest story of the week was this audit of the Department of Transportation. Now, Speaker Voss had said, we hope we find some savings in this audit to minimize any need for a tax revenue increase. Mm-hmm. But instead, a stunning conclusion that WISDOT had underestimated by about a half the cost of some of these projects.
Because it failed to take into account inflation, which is kind of mind-blowing in some ways. You don't think, oh, it's going to take so many years to do this. The costs will go up over time.
Right.
But that really is what grabbed the most attention. There are other things in this audit that you can look at and go, okay, here's an example, for example, such as DOT, if it had gotten more bids, more at least two bids on certain projects, could have saved X millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
If it had done this, if it had gotten done things done on time, it saved money. So all these smaller pots of money, but the headline grabber was they failed to accurately predict the cost of these projects. They came in costing twice as much as what they thought they were going to.
Well, yeah, and the big project was 16 major projects had been estimated to cost $2.7 billion. And they're really going to cost $5.8 billion. And then you had a doubling of 19 projects completed between 2006 and 2005, cost $1.5 billion. And they were estimated to cost $772, a doubling of that.
And remember that first pot you talked about, that work is still ongoing in some cases.
Yes.
So they could actually cost even more than what they're estimating right now. That's still ongoing work. Now, how this fits into the whole debate about transportation funding is interesting because You have people like Jim Steinecke, some of them earlier, saying, well, there's no silver bullet to addressing transportation. We've got to find savings and look for revenue. You have Governor Walker's spokesman saying there's absolutely no way we should be talking about tax increase right now.
Yep.
With what we know, we should save every dollar first before we get anything else.
And let's just read those comments. You alluded to Majority Leader Steinecke. More than ever before, it's important that all options remain on the table in our pursuit to reduce bonding and the delays of vital transportation projects. So he's saying let's keep these revenue raisers on that. But we've been waiting 24 hours for Governor Walker, so we have to be satisfied with what his spokesman Tom Evenson said. We shouldn't even be thinking about raising the gas tax or fees until we find every last cost savings at the DOT, and the audit shows we can find even more savings. But let's talk about savings. You remember what that audit said? They could have saved $289 million on the $9.6 billion in contracts, which is only a savings of 3%.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a rather low number.
By getting things done on time.
By changing the bidding procedures, as you alluded to.
And meeting certain standards, yes.
But I also wanted to highlight the comment of Senator Olson, a veteran senator, who said highway projects are going to cost a lot more than we thought. Now, this is important. We will have to deal with that or realize we can only complete about half of the work. So look at the morass that the Republicans are in. They now have potentially double the cost estimates, reducing the scale of what they can do in the 2017-2019 budget. And you have a governor who's still saying, no tax increase.
Remember, Governor Walker has said for a while now that he would not sign any budget that increased the gas tax or the registration fee without an offsetting decrease in taxes somewhere else. And Republicans, in the Assembly at least, took that as, okay, if we meet this standard, we could work something out. It is becoming increasingly clear that that wasn't something that the government's promising, I'll sign if you do it.
Right.
It was, this is the beginning marker you have to meet before you even think about this. And oh, by the way, there is no sign right now from Governor Walker that he's in any mindset to approve a tax increase of any kind, even if you offset it, because it's clear that he's viewing this as a tax shift.
Yes.
So what's the point? How does that play for him politically to go, okay, I'm going to cut income taxes to raise a gas tax? What's that do for me? Unless Republicans need something, a major, and I mean a major tax package that really does something impressive, I'm just not seeing from talking to people right now whether Governor Walker signs any kind of gas tax increase in this budget.
Okay, but let's continue to stay on this because it is so important, and because of some of the reactions yesterday. Mm-hmm. The statement from Representative John Mako of Green Bay area, who chairs the Ways and Means Committee, he says, we need a Department of Transportation that is transparent and trustworthy once again. So that's signaling, I'm not about to raise any taxes for an agency that I can't trust to get their cost estimates, right? Correct?
Mm-hmm. What's fascinating is in some ways this would be damaging for Governor Walker because it's his agency.
Yes.
They've been in charge for 6 years. Now, some of these projects that were done well before he got in office, right? But this is still his agency. He's still doing things the way he wants, or he's ordered his people more than done. But in a twist, it's actually beneficial to him in this discussion over a tax increase because it gives him ammunition to say, well, we're not doing things right in the first place.
Yeah.
So don't pour more money until we fix this problem first. So in that way, it bolsters his position with Assembly Republicans.
But it's been an incredibly busy morning already. Not only have we had the Federal Court of Appeals, but then you had Speaker Voss and Representative Nygren, co-chair of Joint Finance, and Majority Leader Steinecke. They just sent a letter to Transportation Secretary Dave Ross saying, this is my takeaway, JR, you feel free to add to it. We want real cost estimates of what's in the pipeline, and they want real cost estimates of what projects since 2010 have cost. So what's the significance of this letter?
They're still trying to figure out ways to illustrate the problem because they still see a $1 billion problem. And if they can jack that number up a little bit, it gives more ammunition to say there's a bigger problem than we thought before that demands a bigger solution than we've talked about. So I'm not quite sure yet how they're going to get traction with the governor because, again, he still seems to be standing firm on I'm just not there, on a tax increase.
Right. But part of this audit said that we have 11,758 miles of state highways. In 2010, 53% of them were rated good. 2015, 41% of them were rated good. That is a lower percentage than six other Midwest states. But I love the comment from Senator Coles, co-chair of the Audit Committee. Legislators are more likely to approve road projects when they're given low-cost estimates. It was just very fascinating. So next potential steps in this, I mean, Voss, Steinecke, and Nygren want legitimate new cost estimates, by the way, from DOT and not the audit, mm-hmm. not the audit bureau, by March 15th. What's the significance of March 15th? The
government's budget will be out February 8th.
Yep.
Joint finance starts usually about a month and a half later, somewhere around there, after fiscal bureau gets done picking that budget apart and summarizing everything.
Excuse me.
So somewhere around there they start getting going, but they need, if they want to make some kind of big, bold solution, they're going to need new numbers to do it. Dale Kayenga, who's a member of Joint Finance and a lawmaker from Brookfield, he's already working on a tax and transportation package that he says he hopes to have out in, as of last week, 60 to 90 days. That'll lay out a way to do this $300 million cut they talked about in taxes and then doing a revenue upper. We'll see what it looks like. But again, I'm just not seeing from talking to people a sign the governor is really there on that. That pledge of any budget has to have, with a gas tax or registration fee increase, has to have an offset. I don't think that was a promise I'll sign it. It was more a promise of you have to hit this mark to even begin the discussion before we get going.
And one final note on this issue. The special interest groups who have been arguing for revenue raisers, either the gas tax or the vehicle registration fee or both, they're still saying, look, we have this audit, but it doesn't take away from the need we have mm-hmm. to improve and maintain our highways.
Now, the other thing is, just as Doug and his walker is about, you know, no taxes, they still need the assembly to pass a budget to get anything done. So what's their play? The governor and the Senate need the assembly. What's the play going to be to get those guys somewhere that it can be done? That might be the bog, if you will, of this budget. It could take a while to figure it out.
Yep. Okay. Meanwhile, the governor announced this week that he's going to make welfare reform a centerpiece of the mm-hmm. budget he presents on February 8th. A couple things he wants to do. He wants a pilot program that would, if you're receiving food stamps and you have a child or children in your household between 6 and 18, you'd have to work 80 hours or undergo job training. Right now, I asked the Fiscal Bureau, the rule is if you're childless and able-bodied, you already have to work mm-hmm. or undergo job training. So he wants to expand it to parents, and he wants to replace what's called the income cliff. If you're eligible for a subsidy on child care and you hit a certain limit, you automatically lose that child care. He wants to phase that back. The governor said the goal is the carrot, not the stick. We're not cutting people off. We're helping them into the workforce. Democrats, Senator Johnson in Milwaukee, Senator Taylor in Milwaukee, and here's what Representative Lisa Subak said. Instead of addressing the problem of poverty level wages, the governor is threatening to limit access to food and shelter for low-income families with children. But this welfare reform, this is set up to pass.
Yes, and two, for the most part, Dems are kind of muted about their response to this. If you looked at Senator Lena Taylor from Milwaukee, she said, if you're going to invest in job training and invest in these things we've been calling for, I'm going to keep my powder dry. I'm going to wait for the details. And that's part of the issue here. We don't have the details yet to know exactly what this would do and how much he's going to invest in doing these things. I mean, I talked to Democrats this week who will tell you that, one, they said there could be good things here. If you're going to go out to people who have issues getting a job, if you give them job training, if you really invest in them getting an education, a GED, technical college training, whatever it is, and you invest in that, that could be a good thing. They could be on board with that. If you're just going to have them running around trying to polish their resumes and applying for jobs they're never going to get and frustrate them to the point that they drop out of the welfare program, that's a different story. But if the governor's true intent, Dems tell me, they could be okay with some of this stuff. The other thing is, politically, let's be honest, middle-class voters, the ones who swung hard at Donald Trump this fall, they're sitting in the bar going, well, I work 40-plus hours a week, so darn right, you know. Yeah. If they're going to get a check, they should be doing something. Go back, what is it, 60, 70 years now? What did FDR do, the Democrat who pioneered these public works programs right. to give people a paycheck and job training?
WPA, Works Progress Administration, conservation
so,
camps,
things
like that.
It's an old Dem idea.
Right.
So going back to that, it could be something you could see bipartisan support if, and I just want to stress the if, there's investment. And that's the thing. We don't know how many details, how many dollars are being put into it, how many waivers they need from the feds, because a lot of stuff is not allowed right now under federal law, or not least in the form that Governor Walker's proposed it.
But this has a bit of a Back to the Future tone in it, because he went around the state with former Governor mm-hmm. Thompson. And I went back to Governor Thompson's book, Power of the People, when he first wrote about the first wave of welfare reform. He called it Wisconsin Works, or W-2. Mm-hmm. Now Governor Walker has added to it Wisconsin Works for Everyone. And in that book, I don't know the page number, but Governor Thompson warned, this does cost money up front.
Yes.
In child care and health care and all these other benefits as you try to get people trained and placed in jobs.
And we have money now because of the LFB projection from last week of the new money that we have in tax collections. So it's there. Again, we don't have the details yet. The other thing about this politically is Governor Walker, you know, kind of grabbed the reformer mantle in 2011 with his battle with public employee unions. Got him a lot of credibility in conservative circles. He's been looking for a second act ever since. And remember, we're getting farther and farther away from that 2011 fight, and so this may be act two of Governor Walker's kind of reformer push. Now, there's a couple things for him. One, it could get him more attention nationally as well. Two, it sets him up for his reelect message in 2018. At this point, he hasn't said he's going to run, but we're all pretty sure he's going to,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah.
This becomes the message in 2018 of we reformed welfare, getting people back to work. The economy is going, I mean, he just starts ticking off like low unemployment, all these things. Wisconsin is working for everyone. I'm sure you will see that kind of a message next year.
Well, let's go back to something that we said last week. The new revenue projections, they're going to have an additional $714 million over three fiscal years, mm-hmm. fiscal 16, 17, and 18. No, 17, 18, and 19. I had it wrong.
Yeah.
Here's my question. Will there be any movement to ship some of that additional money to the transportation fund, which, since we now know state highway projects cost double what they've been told?
There are some people I've talked this week who think that the governor will box in lawmakers by doing things like investing in K-12, investing in these programs, investing in the UW, and starting to set them up, say, okay, if you want to grab money for roads, you have to take it out of K-12, which you guys have been telling me for all these, you know, last couple of years that we need to invest more in K-12. So here the governor's saying,
wow,
I've done it. Now you got to take it out to go put it into roads.
State highways versus K-12 or state highway versus Medicaid funding?
Mm-hmm. This used to be a Republican versus Democratic argument, but the governor now is in a position with this money to invest it in those things on tax cuts. Don't forget that Governor Walker is obsessed with the property tax bill. So I will bet you money that in this budget, he will be able to say that in addition to investing in all these good things, he was also able to set up so your property tax will be lower in 2019 than it was when he took office.
Okay, I want to circle back to transportation with this question. You and I read a lot of press releases from Democratic legislators, but they don't have to lead on the issue.
Hmm.
They're just saying the audit shows how much worse our state highways are, so it points up the need for a problem. But they don't have to lead on this issue, do
no,
they?
And they go back to that point before about, in some ways, Governor Walker should be taking some grief over this audit because it's his agency, and they're jumping on that point to say there's a problem over there, and they haven't fixed it.
Do you think the underestimation of state highway costs played a role in Mr. Gottlieb leaving?
That's a good question. It seemed like when he, building up to him leaving, there had been this strained relationship for a while because the Mark Gottlieb that we kind of know as somebody who believes in investing in transportation.
A civil engineer and a straight shooter, yeah.
Now, he's somebody who wants to see more money put in transportation. And the governor's message has been holding the line, you know, on those things. So I just don't think they're on the same page in the end. And at some point, somebody said, this is not working anymore. Either the Gottlieb said, I'm going to leave because we're getting it, or the governor said, hey, this is just not working out. But we're on the same page.
Okay, new subject. You saw committees in both the Assembly and Senate acting on a bill that would prohibit a concept that I wasn't aware of until I listened to some of the testimony. Project labor agreements, mm-hmm. which allow unions and construction companies to set standards, safety, wages, completion date, and this would prohibit it in public projects, projects with state and local governments.
Yes.
Now, fast track, we could see a vote on this before the governor drops his budget, could
possibly. The Assembly says it'll be on the floor February 8th for the first time. I don't know if they're going to try and do a debate on this bill before being on the floor for a 4 p.m. speech. That'd be
That's
interesting
true.
To see if they do
That's
that.
That's true.
But what's happening is this is the next incarnation of the push against unions. We had Act 10. We had Right to Work, Prevailing Wage. This is the next one. And now it's part of that. It's also for backers, in their opinion, it's about saving money. The flip of banning PLAs is PLAs, in some ways, shut some contractors out of bidding for jobs because mm-hmm. they don't have them. So for the conservatives who are pushing this, like, well, this is going to open up the market to more competition and help drive down costs. We'll see if that happens, but it is definitely moving quickly. I don't see right now big snags, but wait and see if this gets caught up in the whole budget morass and transportation. There's somehow it all works in some kind of big picture solution.
Okay, but it's really going fast and should be on governor's desk pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, we had a new estimate of the cost of the manufacturing and ag tax credit. Now, the reason we're talking about it is the new Fiscal Bureau memo, that cost is going to double from $152 million in fiscal 15, $334 million in 19. This is a pinata for Democratic legislators. Senator mm-hmm. Erpenbach said 75% of the credit is going to individuals that each make more than $1 million a year. This is ridiculous and reflects Republican twisted budget priorities. J.R., one of the press releases from the Democrats, I think it was perhaps Gordon Hintz, these cost estimates are roughly double from when the tax credit was introduced in 2011. Mm-hmm. Is this a major liability to the Walker administration?
Well, the thing about the hitch about what Hintz is saying is that I talked to Fiscal Bureau about that projection that he made, and what Fiscal Bureau pointed out to me was that, yes, back in 2011, we were trying to project what's this going to look like in the future,
mm-hmm.
and we had no receipts. So, yeah, we had a number back then, but it wasn't a very, one built off of actual receipts we could tell. Once we got good numbers start to come in, then we built revised projections. So if you look at what was actually budgeted versus what it cost, it has come in higher than what was budgeted in each budget, but not by the same amount that Hintz is talking about. But again, he's using a number that was based off of a projection before anything came in. At the same time, for Democrats, they're trying to make this argument that they're giving away tax break to millionaires and billionaires. The same time that you are doing X to schools, your roads are doing this, it's setting up they did this, and that's why this is happening. That's the argument they're trying to make with all the whole thing.
Well, and the State Journal did the story, this is on a semi-related subject this week, that, 70% of those claiming the tuition credit mm-hmm. for private school expenses had AGI, adjusted gross incomes of more than $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
So this is another kind of a populist, these tax breaks are hurting.
Yes.
The Democrats are saying that. You and I are not saying mm-hmm. that, but the Democrats are
absolutely
saying these tax breaks are hurting.
Absolutely. But you talked to WMC, says, well, this is why we have growth in manufacturing jobs.
And 4% unemployment.
Yeah.
But still, a third of $1 billion in the ag, manufacturing and ag tax credit, that's a big number.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed, I'm praising you again. You reported that Tammy Baldwin, Democratic Senator Tammy Baldwin, raised 1.8 last year, and she opens the year at $1 million. Now, that seems to me kind of a signal to the Democrats that are thinking about, but put that in context, both what she raised and what she's got now.
Baldwin says that that $1.8 million raised last year was among the best of anybody who was not on the ballot in the U.S. Senate. It's often tricky to raise money when you're not up in an election year, so that was a good chunk of change. She had $1 million in the bank. She said, I went back and looked at the FEC reports of Senator Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
He'd raised $600,000 in 2014, same period that she's in right now. He had raised $1.4 million that year and had $600,000 in the bank. So she's eclipsing where he was. Now, here's the thing. Money is not going to be Senator Baldwin's problem. She has a very nice national network for fundraising. She raised, I can't remember how many millions of dollars in 2012 ahead of that bid. Money's not going to be the issue. The issues are going to be, one, how do voters feel about Donald Trump in 2018? Two, how they feel about Scott Walker? And three, how much outside money is going to come in? So she's going to raise her money, but this is going to be unlike last year where there was almost nothing happening until like the very end, this will be a focus. Republicans see a very good pickup opportunity here. At the same time, Senator Baldwin is starting in a very good position financially and sending a message that she's going to be aggressive. The memo they used to announce some of these numbers talked about how she is, fighting against a rigged system, using some of that language you heard this past year. But I think she's in a good spot, but it's going to be a tough fight, and I really want to know what's the environment like next year with President Trump. How are things going? We saw some not good poll numbers this week. How do they do? And the environment is just such a wild card right now. In a normal off-year election in Wisconsin, we see Republicans doing better. But is there any normal right now with President Trump? And oh, by the way, almost every election that's been a midterm going back the last, decade has seemed like a snapback against the party in the White House, except for one or two. So
well, one of the Baldwin press releases last week targeted Duffy, Congressman Duffy, 7th District Congressman Republican Duffy. Is that because the Baldwin campaign still thinks he's the number one potential rival?
I don't know if he's the number one potential rival. He definitely is somebody you have to watch. There is split opinion about whether he's going to run, so we'll see how that plays out. But I'm also seeing with her, pay attention to her votes on Trump cabinet secretaries. She said she's going to vote, for example, Chao for labor. No, yeah. Transportation, sorry. She used to be labor secretary. Chao for transportation. I think there's one other one. But she said she's going to vote against people like Pruitt for EPA and things like that. She is kind of pushing herself to be some, General Mattis, she said she's going to vote for him.
Yeah.
She's positioning herself.
Where is she on Tillerson? Do you remember?
I think she's opposed.
Okay.
She's positioning herself as somebody who is appealing to the base with these obvious, obvious votes where the base is not going to be happy with these cabinet picks. She's going to, stand against them. But places where she can send kind of an independent streak, she's going to send that message by supporting General Mattis, for example. So.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Okay, stock pick time. Rising.
The rural schools, the governor was supposed to announce this on Thursday. Got cold, couldn't go out and do it. We got a hold of a memo that kind of gave us an overview mm-hmm. of what he's going to talk about. There are things like sparsity aid in there, transportation aid. He wanted to do something with broadband and kind of help.
Remember in the State of the State on broadband, he mm-hmm. asked the ledge to pony up $35 million.
Yep. On that. Wanted to help with a pipeline for teachers into rural districts. Maybe a provision to help create hotspots on buses, Wi-Fi essentially. So
you could do schoolwork while you're spending an hour going to school and an hour coming back?
But this is a sign of the investment he's going to make in public schools with a nice kind of carve-out for rural schools. They are struggling with declining enrollment, right? Transportation costs are not going down. All these districts have got long distance to travel. This is a way to try to help those guys. When you have money, you can do it. So good for them.
Well, okay, but some of these rural schools are in counties that just so happen to go for Mr. Trump on November 8th, aren't they, J.R.?
Oh, well, rural Wisconsin does do that, yes.
Oh, the skeptic. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I apologize. Mixed.
So the rainy day fund. So we've heard Governor Walker say, I can't remember how many times, that the rainy day fund is now 165 times bigger than it was when he took office, which, hey, kudos to those guys. I mean, it was like sparse when he came into
82
office.
82 cents, all right.
But this week, the Pew Charitable Trust had a study that found we're actually in the lowest rainy day funds in the country. So there are, I think, 5 states that didn't have any information for, but of the 45 other ones, I think only 6 had a smaller one than we did. So the $280 million is like less than 2% of 1 year's spending. Now, the good news is we're not going to need it anytime soon, right?
Right.
Extra $700 million, we cannot worry about that. But in the grand scheme of things, we're not as big as some other states are.
Okay. Falling.
So corrections. I mean, this Lincoln Hills issue persists. Now we have a lawsuit filed by 4 teenagers about how they were treated at these correctional facilities, that they were treated, quote, like dogs.
Overuse of pepper spray.
Yes. So you're seeing more examples of what's going on or was allegedly going on in these prisons. We don't have everything locked up yet. I think the FBI is still investigating. What's been interesting is politically, we haven't really seen it being attached to Governor Walker yet. I mean, critics have tried to, but there hasn't been a lot of energy put behind this is a result of Governor Walker. This is his problem. I would bet if, depending on what comes out of these investigations, this could be an issue for him in 2018. Because critics have said, well, he won't even go to prison and visit. But he has said, well, there's no point because when you go, they put on the best face for you.
Yeah.
So my people are there. They're figuring things out. But this is, continued a part of the problem with what we're seeing in these youth prisons.
Okay, and let's go back to just highlight the news that just happened. Federal judges have ordered the legislature and the governor to redraw the legislative district maps subject to an appeal potentially by the Department of Justice. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for January 27th.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal. Enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.